It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Footy is back, and life is worth living again.
It is Monday morning, but there's nothing to be sad about because we've got a full round of rugby league to recap just for you. Nick, are you excited? First one of the year?
Always, always. And it is just for you, the individual listener.
Correct. Whoever you are listening to this.
Yeah, this is
just for you.
This is just for you. Like, it's not for everyone else. This is a personalized podcast for you specifically.
And if you're a girl, Campo says, sup.
I don't think there's a lot of female listeners.
We got a few.
I know we have a few, and they're, you know, treasured listeners of the show. But I think our demographic probably skews the other way.
Male and perverted, correct.
The big two.
The core rugby league demographics. Anyway, after about 20 minutes of the Sharks Warriors game on Friday night, I was encouraging Sharks fans to go and do something else with their time. I messaged you. We both said, same old Sharks. They look just as soft through the middle as they did last year. They look like, once again, as soon as they play a good team, they look that they're completely not at the races. And then something weird happened, Nick. They won.
Yeah, then things like totally flipped on their head.
They were great in the second half. They were really good.
Yeah, they were terrific. They were terrific. I did think that, you know, up 12-0 after 20 minutes, I was thinking the Warriors are going to put on an absolute cricket score here, but they went just enough off what had been working for them and sort of gave Cronulla just enough of a ramp to get back into the game. And then once the Sharks sort of got a sniff, they sort of showed a tenacity and a willingness to sort of hang in the fight. That has really eluded them in recent years. And it'll be a theme in this game and in the second Friday night game. I felt like the longer they were defending in the second half, the more times that they turned the Warriors away from their line, the more confident they became in their defense, which is a phenomenon that can happen sometimes. And it got to the point where the Warriors were totally out of ideas.
Yeah.
By the end, by the last sort of 5 minutes, they had enough ball to win this game. The Sharks kept making errors and sort of handing over the ball in good field position. But the Warriors, after about 10, 15 minutes of trying, like, you could tell there was just nothing. They couldn't think of anything new to do, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because, like, so often when you have these games where you get to halftime and you go, oh, geez, oh, we're only down 6, I'll take it. Or only down 10, I'll take it. Like one of those games, you know. So often you just, the second half plays out and you just lose and you think, oh, well, like whatever. It's very rare that you actually come out in the second half and play completely differently. But the Sharks did that. They were physical. They were focused and they didn't really give the Warriors much chance to get anything going in the second half. I know that Sean Johnson's kicking game was fantastic. I thought he had the ball on a string in this one, but it seemed as though the ease in which the Warriors were running through them in that first 20 minutes dissipated quite quickly after that. And I think you're right. Once they had that sort of big stretch where they're up 12-0 with set after set after set on Cronulla's line in sort of the middle of this first half and didn't come away with any extra points, I think that dented their confidence to an extent that they stopped going away from, they started going away from that in the second half. And it showed in the fact that they really couldn't get much going. There was a couple of sort of desperate raids right in the last 5 to 10 minutes of this one. But other than that, I thought that once Cronulla got ahead, not only did they deserve to on the back of their first half defense and their attack at the start of the second half, but also just in the balance of play from that point onwards, I don't really feel like the Warriors did a whole lot to try and sort of earn their way back into the game at all in that last half an hour or so.
I think what happened with the Warriors is once Wade Egan went off and Freddie Lussick came on, they stopped sort of punching around the middle of the field as successfully as they had done. I thought Luke Metcalf sort of struggled to fit into the attack in a meaningful structural way. Like, he scored that great try, obviously, but I didn't think he connected that well with Sean Johnson. You know, that left side never really got going. And I think we also underestimated the loss of Charles Nickel Klukstad. Not because we underrate him as a player or anything like that. Tane Tuapiki ran the ball really well, was really, really willing with his carries and with his defense and all that, but he just wasn't quite fitting into the structure as well as Nickel Klukstad does, you know? And down that right side, which is obviously such a strength of theirs, there were times when he was either a second too early or a second too late with either being there or with his tip-ons or whatever. And the Warriors' attack is, it's very much like a machine in that there's a lot of different moving parts that all work together. And when they get it right, it looks great. But if one guy isn't as sharp as on it as the others, it's a difficult thing for them to overcome because it's not based around individual brilliance, you know? And there were a couple of times where there were chances down that right edge and they just couldn't quite get it right. But then a big part of that as well is Sisi Vitalikai and Ronaldo Mulitalo, who I thought were the two best players on the field, or the two best Sharks, definitely. Vanilla Blake might have been the best player on the field, but Mulitalo and Talakai were terrific in defense with their reads. With an edge like that, where Talakai is like the size of a house and Mulitalo is an insane person when he's on the field, it's very easy for them to just default into flying in and trying to smash blokes every single time. Like, you know, that can be an effective way to shut down an edge. But this wasn't just them screaming in like lunatics. They did it. They were really smart. They were really judicious with the times they did rush in. They were really great with their communication. I thought they were both fantastic. And then in attack, they were both great as well. Like, Talakai was bringing it off his own line and getting like mugged by half of Auckland and was still sort of standing strong. The Sharks, I think, only got like one or two shots at the Warriors line in the second half. And Talakai and Mulitalo ended up combining for what proved to be the match.
Third try.
Yeah, for what proved to be the match-winning try, where the Sharks spread it all the way across to one side of the field, then all the way back across again. And Talakai has a great effort where he throws an offload. He's on the ground, but then he gets up, backs up during the play again to get the offload from Mulitalo and score. So I thought those two were absolutely superb, and I thought they were the difference in this game.
I did love as well that they had so many hard carries to take in their own end because of the field position battle and the fact that the Warriors kept getting them in there, and it so often falling on Talakai to take those runs. And I remember thinking, where the hell are his forwards? Like, why is he? I know he's a big man, but why is he taking this carry every single time? And then Royce Hunt takes it and drops it, and I'm like, oh,
that's why.
Maybe that's why. Yeah, sorry, go.
We talk about Cronulla's middles a lot, and I agree their starters probably weren't the best, but I thought handsome Toby Rudolph and tall Tom Hazelton were both quite strong, particularly Hazelton. And I thought, to me, it wasn't a coincidence that the game started to turn a little bit when those two guys both came on. I thought they were both pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I thought that Royce Hunt had a tough one. And it's not the best game to have a tough one in for him because, like, basically, the guy who's probably going to take your job is lining up across from you in that game and scoring a try and playing really well. But hey, we can't measure everyone against Adam Fanua Blake, can we? Otherwise, we
well he'd take almost anyone's job.
Exactly.
He was unbelievable.
And we did get the revenge game.
Revenge game.
The kind of celebration. Just a little shrug. You didn't really know what.
They all. I don't know what the shrug is, but a lot of them do the shrug when they score. A lot of the forwards do the shrug. What do you want from me?
Forget about it.
There is a little bit of that about it, eh?
Yeah. And Nico Hines' defense on Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, I thought was very good as well. Not often we praise Nico Hines for his defense, but I thought it was very good in that aspect as well. I thought Tuivasa-Sheck in general was just never really adapted to the pace of the game. I think it might take him a few weeks to get back up to rugby league speed after playing Union for the last couple of years. But I thought he had a tough afternoon also.
I don't know if I'd say a tough afternoon. Like he also had problems fitting into the structure, and I think part of that is Metcalf sort of not running that edge the way that he had to. But I thought he carried the ball pretty strongly. There were a couple of instances where he just probably wasn't as sharp as you'd want him to be. But that will come with time, I'd imagine.
You'd hope so. But anyway, Sharks, like what a heartening win to start their season. I think that this was not one that even I, the most biased of Sharks fans, didn't tip them. And it's
even your black, white, and blue eyes could not see a reason to jump on.
Yeah. But yeah, the same old story for the Warriors. Like they're big 2.5 with Harris, Fanua, Blake, and Barnett all made 1 billion meters each, and then no one else really did much at all.
But yeah, I was a bit disappointed with their back rowers, with Ford and Capewell. Capewell just didn't quite have as much of an impact as you would hope. And Ford had a tough night with his hands. And I tend to think that another part of the reason they couldn't get their nice attacking patterns going was because they weren't getting the tone set by those two back rowers.
It's important to set the tone.
You must set the tone. You can't have an unset tone.
You must set the tone.
And I'm pretty confident the Warriors will still be good this year, but I do think if Wade Egan's going to be out for an extended period of time with that elbow injury, the drop off to Freddie Lussick is pretty dramatic. So panic stations, maybe.
You praised Ronaldo. There was that sick pickup on that twisting grubber kick right at the end of the game where he picked it up perfectly in a situation where if he doesn't get that, the Warriors score and, you know, win the game. So great effort by him. We had the first instance of the fake bat back kick contest rule that was brought in this year. And I thought they botched it. I thought he was legitimately challenging for the ball. What did you think?
I did too. I am not sure about a lot of these new rules that they've brought in. I really don't like the short dropout, dropout rule. That's not good. I think earning a dropout is a difficult thing to do, and building attacking pressure should be encouraged, and just firing off a shitty short dropout in the hopes of getting back, that should be a weighty decision. You know, you should have to weigh up the risk reward of doing that. And instead we've just turned it into a bit of a crapshoot, and I don't like it. And I'm with you. I thought Kennedy was going for the ball. Kennedy had a really good game too, a really good defensive game, which was a real hallmark given that Johnson was testing him so much with his kicking game. But yep, didn't like it. Didn't care for it.
Yeah, and was it last year they brought in that you can't tackle the attacking player? But I didn't love that either, so whatever.
They've brought in a lot of new rules. I am struggling to keep track of them all, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, Cronulla march on. Speaking of the new rules, the first new penalty for that kick block thing going in favor of Penrith was extremely funny in that game. That was in what was a very boring and tough game to watch, like I thought that happening was absolutely hilarious. Like, so basically all the headlines in all the papers in the preseason was, oh, this new rule's been brought in because Penrith are so good at using their forwards to block and create pockets for clean kicks and stuff. And then the first penalty for it is against the Storm for Penrith. Lovely. Beautiful.
See, I never quite understood this is to stop Penrith because they're so good at kick blocking. Like, kick blocking is, I don't know if it's a thing you can actually be good at. Like, you've just got the guys standing there, you know. Like, I don't understand. But like, we're talking about Melbourne's 8-0 win over Penrith. You said you didn't think much of this game, which kind of goes in the face of the conventional wisdom. Do you just want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't think, like, whilst Penrith had a lot of chances to score, I don't exactly think it was like razor sharp defense from Melbourne that prevented them from doing so. I think it was more poor execution and a lack of ideas, on top of the fact that both teams dropped the ball 500 times. We were talking about this on Friday night with a couple of people, and we kind of came to the conclusion that, like, if this exact game, like if the gameplay had been exactly the same, but instead of wearing Penrith and Melbourne jerseys, it was 2:00 on a Sunday and it was the Dragons and the Bulldogs, no one would have said this was a good game. Everyone would have said this game was boring. This game didn't live up to the hype. This game was very sloppy, very rusty, very emblematic of what a round one clash can often be because they're undercooked and all this stuff. But instead, we're hearing about how tough and relentless the Storm defense was, and how brutal this fixture was, and how tense and close it was. And I just didn't get any of that. I honestly, with 20 minutes to go, Nick, I just wanted to go to bed.
Well, you are a sleepy boy.
I was pumped. Remember how pumped we were on Friday morning for this doublehead? And the first game, I think, lived up to it. I think the first game kept its end of the bargain. But yeah, I thought this was an absolute bludger. I really did.
Oh, look, I do agree that if it wasn't Melbourne and Penrith, people would be saying, geez, how shit was this? But yes, I do think it was physical. I do think it was tense. And those things are not, like, those things in quality don't always go hand in hand. But then quality, well-executed rugby league isn't always required for a compelling match, you know?
Mm.
I disagree with you a bit on the Storm defense. I actually thought they made some terrific efforts, particularly in that last 15 minutes when...
I definitely think they were the better team.
Well, much like the Sharks, it's like they were challenging themselves to see how many errors they could make and then still...
And then try to break that record.
Yeah. But it's the same thing. Like that, I thought you could see them becoming more confident in their defense the more often that they turned Penrith away. And this game struck me as being very similar to the Broncos-Penrith game from round one last season, where very similar situation. The Broncos went down to Penrith. They didn't have Reece Walsh. And I think everyone was like, well, yeah, you know, maybe they can give him a go. But without not fully loaded, they can't win. And we thought the same with the Storm, with no Sofa Solomona and no Jonah Pezet. And even if Penrith were a bit underdone, even if Penrith are nowhere near what they will be towards the end of the season, any win over that mob is huge, because it will give this Storm team the confidence that they can run with Penrith. And given what's happened over the last few years, that's a really big thing. The Storm have been well off the pace with the Panthers. We saw it in the prelim last year. They got the shit kicked out of them. It was the biggest loss in any preliminary final in NRL history. That record, of course, was broken the next night. But still, I think it's a big thing for the Storm, a big thing for their confidence. And I think what would be really pleasing for me if I was a Storm fan is some of the guys who played well in a different way that they normally do. I thought Xavier Coates had maybe his best game in first grade. He was really, awesome. Really strong. Like, and like, he can do, he's always been able to do a lot of stuff. He's really fast. He's a great finisher and all that. I thought his yardage work was really good.
Mm.
But even though he only put up, I think, 114 meters, which isn't massive. But with me, it was more the intensity that he was running with. He earned two penalties in exits. That's just because he ran hard and like physically dominated the person who was tackling him. You know, mm. He showed an aggression and a power to his running, which I haven't really seen before. We've joked a lot about how Xavier Coates can jump up and be the first to any ball that's in the air, but he's also cursed in that he never catches any of them. Well, there's an easy solution.
Just tap it back.
Catching is for losers and nerds and AFL players, brother.
That's true.
You don't need to do it. He's putting shots on too. He put a shot on Brian Toto. Who does that?
No one.
I didn't think that was possible.
No, not at all.
So I was really impressed with him.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I thought, and especially in the first half, Trent Loiero's move to the middle seems like that makes sense. I think he was a lot better there than we saw from him in the edges last year. And I thought that Christian Welch really changed the game and gave Melbourne a bit more mobility going forward when he came on too. So, yeah, I think a pretty solid performance from him. They'll get Cam Munster back. Jonah Pezet had a tough night, as we briefly touched on. But
you reckon?
I thought he started.
He didn't start great. But I thought he really grew into the game as he went on. I thought him and Hughes were quite impressive with their kicking game.
Yeah, the kicking was okay. I just think that like his decision making with ball in hand left a little bit to be like, more so in the first half than the second. You're right. I don't think you can praise their playmakers too much in a game where they scored 8 points.
But, of course you can. They were on the back foot all the time. They were kicking out of their own end heaps. Hughes' kicking game was
I thought
Pezet grew into the game really, really nicely. And I think that's an important thing, because it sounds like they have no idea what's going on with.
Yeah, well, that was concerning. Those comments were concerning.
But
neither Bellamy or Munster had any real like concrete answer on what's doing.
Yeah. But if I was the Storm, I'd feel very confident taking my time with Munster, because this was a big pressure game. And I thought Pezet did quite well out there.
Yeah, we're never betting against him in round one again, right? I can't
believe I did.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in you.
I cannot believe that I did, man.
Not me. Not me.
What was I?
I'm disappointed I didn't tip the Sharks. I'm disappointed you didn't tip the Storm.
You got to tip your team in round one. And you didn't tip the Sharks.
That's true. I'm on Coward. I'm hanging out on Coward Street. But yeah, Storm hosts the Warriors next week. So I mean, that's as we know, the Warriors do not play the Storm well. so they can be in a bit of trouble, and
make sure you take that into all your rugby league discourse this week. There will be people that say, "Well, the Warriors, they always play the Storm well." It's like, yeah they
then
did.
You go look it up.
Yeah, they played them well in 2008, and they haven't played them well since.
Yeah, and in one of those games, they let in 70 points, and that wasn't that long ago.
Not great.
Not great. But Storm, good on.
Did really well. Yeah. So Penrith are going to be fine, right? Like nobody's panicking. But I think this game sort of showed something that Penrith are going to have to work out this year, which is they're going to have to find more craft in their attack. There are probably 15 other teams, or maybe 13 or 14 other teams in the league that the way Penrith played would have been enough. They would have just totally steamrolled people, blunt force trauma their way out of this, bash and barge away you go. But the Storm, but because Penrith's execution was just a little bit off where it usually is, and because the Storm really dug in and battened down the hatches, you know, Penrith looked a bit limited. Penrith looked a little bit out of ideas, you know, unless it was throwing it to Taylan May, who had a really good game, I thought. There just wasn't a whole lot that was going on, you know, and their execution was down a little bit on a couple of sweeps. There was one in particular where Liam Martin went for a tip on to, I think it was Taruva that, you know, they were, oh, I think, no, it was Toa, sorry. Tip on to Toa that I think later in the season he would get right, but Coates raised up and made a great defensive play and they ended up buggering it up. So there's little things like that that they'll get better at. But I think it did show that this Penrith team has like a couple of little things to work out. I've no doubt they will, but it just hasn't happened.
They're still the best team to me, but this is the first year where maybe the like sheer volume of first graders that they've had poached by other clubs in the last 4 years might have caught up with them a tiny bit. Like Liam Martin's still awesome, but I think their back row depth beyond here, like Scott Sorensen's all right, but like beyond that, their back row depth I don't think is what it used to be. And losing Spencer Lenu is massive as well. I know they've got guys that are more than capable of stepping up, but in a game like this one where sort of Moses Leota, I think, had a quiet game, you might look to a guy like Spencer Lenu to come on and really make a difference in that 25-minute set. And they just didn't have that off the bench this time. So, yeah, for the first time, I think their forward pack is not as impenetrable as it has been in the last couple of years. Still the benchmark, don't get me wrong, but just like maybe a little bit closer to mortality than in prior years.
Yeah, I think if you look at the centers, right, if you look at Tungo and May, who were both pretty good in this game, I think you can sort of see what you're talking about. They're both really good players. And like I said, I thought May took to the centers really well. But they're also quite similar as players, you know. They are very sort of straight up and down. Tungo's got a little bit of skill about him, but he hasn't really shown it as much since moving to the right-hand side. And when there's a little bit of a lack of craft there, maybe, if you are strong enough to stop them from running over the top of you, which is a really hard thing to do, but if you are strong enough to do that, kind of don't have a plan B at the minute. Sure, they'll get one. Sure, they'll get one.
Oh, absolutely.
Not worried, not concerned. I don't think there's a Penrith fan that is, but that's a thing they're going to have to try and find.
Dylan Edwards looks terrifying.
You reckon?
Called him Voldemort on Friday. I was very pleased with it. So
really? I thought he ran the ball really well, like he always does, but I don't want Dylan Edwards at first receiver and stuff like that. Did you hear
what I said?
I thought you said involve him more. You love Dylan Edwards. You think he's the best
player on
the team?
I said he looks terrifying. Like, he looks like Voldemort
because of his hair. Oh, okay. I thought you meant he looked terrifying, like, oh, wow, he looks so good.
Oh, yeah, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
No. He, like, physically looks like the Dark Wizard. So
I don't know if that hair's coming back, eh?
Yeah, well, you know, we've all got our problems. Oh, you know, he's got problems, Nick.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of problems.
Jesus Christ. All right, the Bulldogs 8, the Parramatta Eels 26. Bryce Garrett's awesome. We'll get to that in a second. I just want to really quickly. I'm sick and tired, and the Bulldogs fans I've spoken to about this are sick and tired as well. Are sick and tired of, like, they have a game like this where they look bad, they get smashed, nothing goes well, and you have to hear, like, the commentators during the game and pundits after the game. They go, oh, I liked what I saw from the Bulldogs. Oh, I think there's something there. And then just not elaborate on that at all. Just sort of give them a pass every time they have a game like this. Like, they lost by 18 points. They should have lost by about 40. They were terrible. Their forward pack got completely dominated. Their most exciting player got injured. There was really nothing to like about this from a Bulldogs point of view, which was the general sentiment I got from the several Bulldogs fans that I spoke to about this game, who I legitimately at this point do feel bad for. And yet, we've got like commentators being like, oh, well, you know, if they had better field position and more ball, they might have been in this one. So, well, why do you think their field position was bad? Think about it. And then on Sunday morning, you've got radio people saying, I like what I see. They're building something. What are they building? What the hell are they building, Nick? Tell me. because I don't want to live there. Are they building Opal Tower? Is that what they're building?
It's the Oasis project.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it does my head in. Like, and this is not specific to the Bulldogs. This is a thing across sports and across rugby league where, like, people don't want to be overly negative about teams, and they'll say things like, oh, they're building towards something. Oh, gee, such and such look good. Such and such look good. And it's just not true. This was rough. This was a really rough first round game against your biggest rivals. You weren't at the races at all. You got a couple of late tries when they kind of stopped playing to make the scoreline look not as bad as the game was. And this was all our concerns in the offseason were leading up to this was they didn't sign any forwards. They have too many kind of okay guys that can play spine positions and maybe a bit of roaming 13 off the bench and that's it. And the makeup of this team makes no sense to us. And all of those things were kind of proven correct. Oh, and you saying, why is Stephen Crichton not getting a crack at fullback? Blake Taff had a rough game. He threw one really nice pass. But other than that, pretty rough in kick defense, which has always been the problem with Blake Taff. I think great player with ball in hand, not great on the other side of things. And then the forward pack just got monstered again. They were kicking from their own 30, 35 every set. It was just a complete disaster from start to finish for this team. But I like what I saw because I hate them.
Well, you said you actually feel sorry for Canterbury fans.
I legitimately do.
I don't believe you. You hate the Bulldogs. You have since you were a small boy.
Mm.
I don't think you have any sympathy for them.
No. I feel bad for like Josh and Pop and Michael Darren and a couple of other people and all the people that listen to the show and a couple of my other mates. But in general, no. But just those specific people, yes.
Yeah. Look, it is annoying when people say, I like what I saw and then don't mention anything that they liked that they did see. I get it. People don't want to be crazy negative to start the season. You know, hope springs eternal and all that. And you want to look for things that you like, but there just was not much to like from Canterbury at all, really. Like Para, I didn't really think Para got out of first gear, you know? And the problem with the Bulldogs is, you know, it's no secret they don't really have like a lot of competent middles, but they seem intent on playing this like compete and complete football, you know, where you keep it tight and you grind stuff out and all those coaching buzzwords that we hear all the time, and they just don't have the team to do that, you know. The Poasa Famasuli, the starting front row, had three carries for 28 meters. Like, what's going on?
That's not great.
If you don't have the meat in the middle of the field, you can't play that way. You know, the only way you can play is zing it wide all the time, and that just never happened. Well, actually, no. The only two times it happened on the Stephen Crichton try, where they finally got kick out a little bit of early ball to try and create something. And then it happened on the last tackle just before the Bailey Simonson intercept, where again, they looked pretty good until Blake Wilson just dropped it cold. And it's just like, I understand that you want to build a team based on hard work and shit kicking, all that sort of stuff. I get that's how you want to sort of build whatever you're doing out there, but you got to play to your strengths. And the Dogs don't have many of them. Right. But one of them is they've got Crichton and they've got Kiraz and they've got Kickout, and like they have dudes that can create stuff out wide. So why not sling it, man? Why not run teams around a little bit? Like, there's no point trying to go through the middle if you can't do it. And they just seem to be really set on that, you know? And like Jamin Salmon started at lock, I thought, and they played the first half there before he went out to the centers. I thought he was not great at all, you know, like errors and penalties and just not good stuff. And
one guy I actually did genuinely like what I saw from was Josh Curran when he came on. I think he tried really hard. He was really involved. And he's a guy, just give him the 13 and just leave him out there for as many minutes as you want. Because there's one thing about Josh Curran, he works hard, he tries hard, and he gets involved. And that's, if you don't have talent, you need effort. And he is an absolute effort merchant. Leave him out there for as many minutes as he wants to play. Just give him the starting 13. Like, there's no sense in starting a guy in Jamin Salmon, who I don't think is even a forward, much less a starting lock in the NRL, to have Curran, who you brought over in the offseason, who had a pretty good year last year, and just to have him playing the exact same role he did with the Warriors. I don't really get it. Start him.
There's a lot of things I don't get with this Canterbury team. Chief among them is what they're doing with Matt Burton.
What's going on?
So I have thought for a long time now that Matt Burton and Jack Whiten are extremely similar, not just their style of play, but even the way they apply themselves to matches. Whiten's a bit bigger and a bit stronger, Burton is has a little bit more control with the way he plays. But I have seen Jack White have a very similar game to this many, many times, right? I think it's clear that the Bulldogs have said something to Burton along the lines of, we want you to focus on your running game. Hang out on that left edge. We'll set up stuff for you. We don't want you organizing, right? Which I understand. Mm. But he just sort of hangs out there and waits for the ball to come to him, you know? And he was really quiet in this one. Like, it wasn't that he was bad. He just didn't really do anything apart from put a couple of kicks in. And I know that you think he's a better center than he is a 5'8", and he probably is right now, but the Bulldogs can't afford to play him in the centers. He's capable of too many different things to play in the centers. But if Drew Hutchinson can swing around and play both sides of the ruck and get involved all the time, so can Matt Burton. Like, I think I would say to Matt Burton, whoever the halfback is, follow him around the field. Just follow him, link up as much as you can, try and attack down both sides, because this just hanging out down one edge, that just isn't working for anyone. They're not getting the best out of him. He's not getting the best out of himself. They did a similar thing to finish last season. No one was happy with it, you know, and he is capable of too much to have that diminished role in the side, and they need more from him if they're going to do anything of note this year. So hanging out down that left edge like Jack Whiten did in many, many games to Canberra over the years, it's not enough. It's not enough. No. You have to go looking for it. You can't wait for it to come to you.
Yeah, especially in a team like this with just no real other creative outlets at all. Is there anything else you could change, do you think, to try and put them in a better position to succeed?
Can we put some of the forwards on steroids? Like, well, get them lifting big, you know? Go into a few less reputable Bankstown gyms and see what's up.
Well, Josh Ty, one of patron friend of the show, Dogs fan in a bad place, was floating the idea of Kikau playing in the middle for half an hour. Just to, like, why not? Like, honestly, get some physicality
just
in there.
Bro, it's a similar thing to Burton, right? Kikau had 5 runs for 42 meters. He looks like not a enough. Shadow of the guy he was at the Panthers. Yep. If you're not going to give him the ball out wide, then yeah, put him in the middle. Why not? Why not? Mm. Like, they need something. They need something. Like I said, I thought Para were fine. Para were tidy, but I didn't think they were anywhere near their capabilities because they didn't need to be.
The Dogs SG ball team won, so future's bright. Great. The under-16s girls team did win 92-0. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah. Yeah, good, you gotta love that. The junior, Paulo, was terrific off the bench.
Off the bench? What's doing there? Masterstroke.
Don't mind it because I think Offahen Gawe is better as a starting player, and Paulo coming on when the game's just opened up a little bit more, it changes him from just being a battering ram, which he's very good at, to using the full range of his skills. He had 5 tackle busts. He had 2 offloads. He didn't get a try assist for the second Bryce Cartwright try.
Yeah.
Ryan Madison did. But the reason Madison was
able
to... Can I
have half a point for front row Friday?
You cannot. The reason Madison was able to throw that nice offload and put Cartwright into space is because Paulo had isolated the defender with a nice short ball to Madison, you know? And I love it when Para's forwards link together that way. That sort of gives them another attacking gear that a lot of other teams don't have. Thought Joey Lussick was pretty good at dummy half.
I have that on my notes. He played
well. Yeah, he did. Like, Brendan Hands is industrious and tough, but Lussick might have a little bit more about him in attack. He kicked that 40-20. He got, I think he threw the short ball for Cartwright's first try as well. And I don't think it's coincidence that Parramatta sort of Moses and Brown went to another gear in the past when they had Reid Marnie and when he was able to sort of lift his playmaking chops a little bit. So Lussick doesn't have to be Harry Grant or Appy Corriss or anything like that, but if he can just chip in here and there and create a little bit more space for Brown and Moses, that's a very good thing for them. So he's not the perfect hooker, but he might be the perfect fit for Para.
I was surprised I left Moses out there for the whole game. He was clearly struggling with something, but didn't matter in the end. Hopefully,
I think there's a chance that they said come off, and he said get fucked, I'm staying out here.
Yep, good. Which, you know,
wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, respect it. So yeah, they were fine. Para, good solid win to start. A nice Coltrane banker for the boys, Nicholas. You and I.
Well, in a weekend filled with upsets. You know, you had to take what the defense gave you, and the defense gave us this.
You got anything else for this game before we move on to speaking of upsets?
Oh, Cardi. We've got to talk about Cardi, don't we?
Isn't he just a different player from this guy that has been so maligned for the last few years? And I think he was pretty good last year too, but...
He was
physical in this game. He was direct. He's not sort of pussyfooting around and avoiding contact and avoiding those tough carries anymore. He wants the ball. He wants contact. And he played really well in this game and was ripely rewarded with two tries. But it wasn't just the tries. I think that just in general, his physicality and stuff was really, really impressive. And that's a guy that if you can add a guy like him who for so many years has had the tools and the capabilities to be a sort of a really top class forward in this sport, if you can add a guy like him playing to that level alongside some of those other guys that Parramatta already have, that's a terrifying prospect for other teams.
Yeah, like he did have a good year last year, and this performance was very reminiscent of some of that because it wasn't built on the Bryce Cartwright stuff from his Penrith days. Like, I know he had six offloads and I know he scored two tries or whatever, but both those tries came from him just doing normal meat and potatoes back rower stuff, running really good lines, timing his run really well, you know, running into blokes like he was running into space, you know, when he was at Penrith. He could do incredible things with the ball, but like just normal back row stuff was not an area of strength for him. And I think that's the big change that he's sort of made over the last 12 months. He's become really good at the little things, and that was not always the Bryce Cartwright way. He's still obviously got, I've got to stop saying obviously, Jesus Christ, Nick. He's still got small things in his game that other blokes cannot do. Like, there are not a lot of forwards in the league that can throw six offloads and look good doing it. You know, there are not a lot of forwards who can pass the way he does. But he's sort of married that up with just a greater willingness to do the hard stuff. And that's one of Brad Arthur's real strengths as a coach. If you're a forward and you have any modicum of ability, he can get it out of you. He's got a real, real gift for that. And what Cartwright's been able to do over the last 12 months or so, it's a real credit to him, and it's a real credit to that program they got over at Parramatta. So nice to see, because I thought he was going to be out of the league, honestly. Yeah. When he left the Titans and he came down to the Power, I thought he's going to have 1 year there, and then he's going to be playing Ron Massey Cup. And in 3 years' time, I'm going to ring you up and say, did you know Bryce Cartwright's playing for East Hills? And you'd be like, oh, yeah, well, that's crazy.
Let's go down to Smith Park right now.
Yeah, I thought something like that was going to happen. But he's still out here doing it, and he's playing great. It's good to see.
Good work, Bryce. All right. Speaking of losers, the Gold Coast Titans. Like, what? All right. First of all, if you Cold Train Cup to the Gold Coast Titans, nature's most unpredictable force in round one,
nature's cruelest mistake,
you are a lunatic and you deserve to fail. And fail you most certainly did, because the St. George Illawarra Dragons, Nick, played great. Tyrell Sloan had
really
the
did.
Best game I think I've ever seen him had in first grade. Ben Hunt was awesome. Their forwards were great. They absolutely deserved this win, and they got it comfortably in the end with a 28-4 victory.
They looked terrific from the start. I think that Sloan try came in about the third minute, and they just sort of were never headed from there. You know, trial form and the jump to regular season stuff, you know, we talk about that a lot, but I was struck by how fit they looked. And I was struck by how hungry they looked. I think they've probably been reading a lot of the preseason previews that sort of had them finishing last. You know, players can say they don't read the papers, but they hear things, you know. It'd be impossible to escape the sort of all of misery that people have been putting out around the Dragons, but they just really, really ripped in. There were a lot of guys I thought who showed some really great signs. So, like, we can start with Sloan. Scored the three tries, but I thought what was really pleasing is all three tries came from things that he'll be able to do every single week. The first one came from him pushing up in support off Raymond Fatala-Mariner, and the second two came from supporting up the second one came from supporting up the middle of the field, and then the third one came with him connecting with Ben Hunt on an edge. Tyrell Sloan can do those things every single week. You know, this was not him creating three tries out of nothing like he might be able to do once a season. All the stuff he did well is stuff he'll be able to do well every single time he pulls a jersey on. And that's a really pleasing thing. Similarly, Zach Womack and Moses Sully both made the most meters in any game that they've had in their careers, right? And yeah, Lomax had a couple of line breaks, but Sully didn't. It was 196 meters of hard yakka. You know, I think it's pretty clear that Flanagan has sort of said to him, if you're not running the ball this many times a game, then what the hell are you doing? Have you seen you? Have you looked in the mirror recently, Moses? You're a giant. You know, so I feel like he'll be able to do that a lot. And, you know, I thought Lomax really took to the wing quite well. I said on the previous show how skeptical I was about him doing there. I said he didn't have the bulk for it, which was a nice way of saying I don't think he has the willingness to carry the ball 24 times in a game and throw himself around like that. Well, guess what, dickhead? You're an idiot, because Zach Lomax did have that.
Made you look quite the fool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's not even April yet.
No.
So I think it's really pleasing for Saints is all those guys will be able to do that every week. A lot of what they did well was effort-based, involvement-based, and that's the sort of thing that you can replicate week to week.
I love, by the way, that Raymo Fatala-Marino looked awesome, and the Bulldogs just ran him out of town for why? And their whole thing is they don't have enough forwards, and he looked like a completely renewed player in this game. I thought he was just running around creating havoc. That pass for the first try was awesome. I mean, if he'd looked like, what was he? He did bomb that try though after that Lomax catch and throwback. Just I think a few minutes after that Sloan try. Remember, like, had the whole field and just cut back inside. And I was like, what are you doing, big fella?
Dude, if you get one try assist out of Raymond Fatala-Marino in a game, like,
true.
You can't complain when you don't get two.
Yeah. I'm not sure why he went back to the right, but it doesn't really matter. The Titans settled down, got back into it. They had plenty of good ball. They just didn't do anything with it in the first half. There was a nice kick by Weaver for that try. But again, other than that, it was just a lot of shuffling from side to side without very much directness. And the Dragons were more than capable of handling what the Titans were offering. And if Des Hazler has turned these chaotic, unpredictable lunatics into a boring meat and potatoes team, I will never forgive.
How dare he?
The warning signs are here.
Taking the chaos out of the Titans, it's like, I don't know, it's like burning the American flag on the 4th of July. Why would you do this? Why would you do this to our country?
But it did seem a little bit like that. They weren't the run-and-gun and Titans that we've become so used to.
Yeah, like there's a couple of stats I want to throw at you. So Des, in the back half of his coaching career, so his second stint with Manly and his last couple of years at the Bulldogs, a lot of the time, not exactly sparkling attack was a hallmark of that. 2021 was a different thing because of the PVL ball. But that aside, most of the time, his teams were very conservative with their attack. They didn't offload much. The Titans only had two offloads all night. And again, that's fine if you've got the team that can back it up. But the Titans don't really. Like, Phil Sami had 11 tackle busts, which is insane and really good. Apart from him, no one really offered that much in the back line in terms of like blockbusting, tackle breaking, running. And then in the forward pack, Mo Fodawaker broke one tackle. Tino Fasua Malaawi, who I thought was fantastic, broke four. No one else had one. Like, there just wasn't a whole lot of grunt or explosiveness in their forward pack. You know, you compare
their bench combined for 104 meters the three forwards. So
yeah, you compare it to the Dragons. Fatala-Marino had five tackle busts. Jaden Sewer had five tackle busts. Like, both of them alone had more tackle breaks than the entire Titans forward pack combined. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of muscle, a whole lot of ability to create much ruck speed unless it was Tino hitting it up. I really want to wrap Tino again because not only did he make the most meters of any forward on the field, he was working off the ball like a dog as well, like running heaps of decoys and really, really going for it. It's just a shame the rest of them didn't go with him. But losing Foran ended up being a really tough thing for them to overcome because their attack, I just didn't think, had a whole lot of intelligence about it. You know, like, if I was coming into this game, in the lead up, you would think, okay, Zach Lomax is playing on the wing. He's only done that in first grade once before. Let's go after him in some way. He's good in the air in attack. defending the ball in the air is a much more difficult thing. Let's just bomb the shit out of him and see what happens. All right? Maybe we can change it up later. Maybe he'll drop six balls. I don't know, but he's uncomfortable in that position. So let's try it. They didn't bomb to him once. They just kept kicking to Ravalawa all the time, you know? And Ravalawa does have an error in him, but he's also a lot better under the high ball than he used to be, and he's just more used to it than Lomax. And they just didn't sort of target that at all, you know? And there's just little things like that, you know? Like, I just didn't think the Titans attacked with a whole lot of intelligence or anything like that. I was very, very disappointed in them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there's not a lot of games where you go into a season thinking, oh, the Titans should take care of business comfortably. But this was one of them. Given what we saw from the Dragons in the preseason, how poor they were in the Charity Shield with a full-strength team against, you know, the Rabbitohs backups. But they turned it around completely here. They looked like everything that Shane Flanagan changed going into this game worked. It all just came together perfectly for them. So I'm very happy for their fans because they were miserable going into this year. And they've already changed their tune. Ibs is buying grand final tickets. Hunter's changed his phone background to the ladder with the Dragons on top of it. It's great stuff. And I think that
the March premiers are back.
They really are. And honestly, like, screw it, man. Like, this only one team gets to win at the end of the year. It's most of the time as a sports fan, you're miserable. Just enjoy it. Just gronk off. Who cares? Be happy. Enjoy it.
I was really excited for Bo Fermor's comeback this weekend. I was talking to someone, I think it was on Friday.
You love Bo Fermor.
I do love Bo Fermor. And he said, oh man, Titans Dragons, not much there. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, there's something. Like, I'm excited to see Fermor. And he was like, man, it's going to be rough. And I was like, why? He goes, because you love Bo Fermor so much, you've forgotten how bad a defender he is.
Yeah, he was.
And I was like,
how
bad could he possibly be? And the answer was pretty bad. And then I thought about it more and I was like, oh yeah, he wasn't a great defender back when he was healthy. So that's another one for me. I'll take a lap.
Which try was it that he created a saloon passage for them? I can't remember.
Sloan's third.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah that wasn't great.
And then I just want to wrap Kyle Flanagan as well. Yeah. Like, obvious player who's, it's very easy to take shots at. I think we all have in the past at one time or another, but it was just good to see him play well. I thought him and Hunt combined pretty well. They kept it really simple. I think they just sort of followed each other around the field and just tried to pass each other the ball as much as they could. And if your halves are doing that, you're going to be able to create things. If your halves are linked together, stuff can happen.
Yeah. I did love that the Sharks junior, who played for the Roosters and the Bulldogs, kissed the Dragons badge within an hour of his first grade debut. Just fantastic.
The badge kiss. In one of his last games for Canterbury as well, they played the Sharks down at Shar Park. He scored a try and he like slapped the badge and did the whole
thing. Didn't they lose that game by 100 points? Like, was that the only try they scored? Yeah.
I can't remember. They might have scored another one, but they did lose the game by 1,000 points. But he's just passionate about his clubs, man. He's just out here.
He's a good clubman. That's what they say about clubman. Him. Yeah.
Fine clubman, Kyle Flanagan.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dragons, good on them. Good for you. Who do they play next week?
They play the Dolphins.
Oh, could be 2-0. Look at you.
Well, they're
running the gauntlet of the Queensland teams. They've got the Cowboys week after that.
Sunshine Swing.
Wow, and then I'll see you down there in round four, team of the podcast, the Dragons at Wynn Stadium. That kind of sounds like a fun game right now with how those teams played in round one. What a weird thing to say.
There's still a lot of
we might be singing a different tune in 3 weeks' time, but if that game was this weekend, I'd be excited for it, which is very strange to say. The Moses Sully Derby. Anyway, one more game. And the North Queensland Cowboys are back. They're all the way back.
They were terrific. So they beat the Dolphins by a handsome 25 points.
Not a Scorigami, though, somehow. 43-18 has happened before.
I was going to say, do you want to explain what Scorigami is?
So this is a phenomenon that started in the NFL, but we started doing it as well, where a Scorigami is when a scoreline occurs that has never been done before in the history of that sporting league. So 43-18 has happened before. When Kyle Felt scored that try at the end that was taken off after the bunker realized that he dropped it, had they kicked the goal, 49-18 would have been a new scoreline that had never happened before. 47-18 had happened before. So it gets increasingly rare because the more games you play, the less unique scorelines there are. But 43-18 has occurred before, but had that been a converted try at the end, 49-18 would have been a Scorigami, but not to be.
Let's start with the good stuff. Cowboys were terrific.
Zach Laibach, one-handed dummy.
Oh, loved it. Loved it. Like a big, a rangy center running free in the Queensland sun. That'll get the blood pumping.
That'll feed families. Yeah, he was awesome. He was fantastic, Zach Laibach.
Yeah, he took to it really, really well. We mentioned him in the lead up. I think just because he's so straight up and down with his running, I think he's going to really offer something down that edge with Nane. I thought Tom Dearden was fantastic. Showed a lot of the sophistication that he's found in his game over the last 12 months. He's not just a show and go running guy anymore. He can do a lot of other things. Scott Drinkwater creating a lot of stuff out the back. I thought Lukey and Nane were both really strong as well. And I thought the Cowboys as a whole just looked really sure of themselves. They looked like they knew exactly where their strengths were and they knew exactly how they were going to get there. And that's a really good thing for them because so often last year, they really struggled to put together so much of the talent that they do have. You know, I think it's telling to me that three of their first four tries came from them running the ball on the last tackle. I think that's the sign of a high confidence attacking team. You know, they were clearly really, really focused on going after the gap between Sean O'Sullivan and Connolly Llewellyn.
We don't have a snappy name for that yet. There's no Moylan Motorway, but we'll find something there. But
Llewellyn's injured, so we got time to think about it.
Okay, good.
And it was very clear as well that they were going to target Tessie News decision-making. They were going to try and spot up Cody Nikorima as often as they could. They had things they wanted to go after and they had ways they wanted to go after him and they just did it. They executed it to perfection. Like, this is what I wanted from the Cowboys from the jump because they don't need to settle down. They don't need to find their way. They have everything they need. They know what they have to do and they went out there and did it, which is very, very pleasing.
They were outstanding. You didn't mention Chad Townsend. I thought organizationally he was very good.
He was. Well. He was strong. Yep.
And Felt nearly takes an intercept in the first, like when they're up 6-0. I think Dolphins end up scoring a set later. But if Felt had taken that intercept, does he go the 90? Do you think he still got it in him?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I'm glad you still believe in Kyle Felt.
No, I don't believe in Kyle Felt. Kyle Felt has gotten old, and let's face it, crazy over the years, you know? And he is still the undisputed king of weird shit.
Yeah.
And sometimes that weird shit is good. Sometimes that weird shit
sometimes
is...
Sometimes it's dropping the ball over the line.
Sometimes
for
it's
no
dropping
reason.
The ball over the line when a try would equal the clock.
Can you imagine
level?
If he'd done that in that grand final? Ooh-wee. Wouldn't that have been something?
But an old winger going the length of the field on an intercept, I think measures up as weird shit. So yep. I think Kyle Felt could have done it.
Yeah, I was read Bromwich for his hands on that try as well. Like when this game was going back and forth at the start and we thought it was going to be a bit of a shootout before the Cowboys pulled away, I thought that was a really nice bit of ball playing from him too. But yeah, the Dolphins, I feel like they just shot themselves in the foot a bunch of times. I think they had some really weird errors. They had some bizarre decision-making. There was that play where Hammer kicked the ball for no reason when he'd either gone himself running at Drinkwater, who's... you know, not a great defender, or turned to his right and he had, was it Boss? It wasn't Boss. It was someone on his inside that he had pretty much unmarked. And instead, he tried to kick to Jack Bostock on the wing and got it all wrong. It was just things like that that just didn't...
You want to know something bad? When you said he kicked it for no reason, I wasn't sure which time you were talking about. I wasn't sure if it was that line break or when he had the loose ball and just kicked it straight to Heal and Lukey, you know? So
tough day for him.
Yeah, look, he had a tough start and I think it's pretty clear he got the yips and... like just sort of was pretty shaken up from there. The New and Nikorima stuff just really did not work. The Cowboys went after them both pretty, pretty badly. New ran the ball okay, but defensively, I don't know if he's got it in him to...
When's Isaiah Katoa getting back in this team?
Who knows, man? I thought the Dolphins forwards looked really old, and that is always going to be the fear for them without Tom Gilbert there to sort of give him a bit of that blockbusting presence. It's just really, really tough. I actually thought they looked quite unprepared for this game, which is not something you would often say about Wayne Bennett teams. There have been times in the past where his sides have come out and gotten smashed around one and ended up having great years. Like in 2006, and that's going back a long way, the Broncos played the Cowboys in round one and got smashed. They went on and won the comp. In 2015, they played Souths and got smashed and went on to make the grand final. So I'm not saying that's the ceiling for the Dolphins or anything like that, but Wayne Bennett sides can have this in them. Like, we think of them as coming into a season really well prepared, but this sort of thing is not unknown to him. But yeah, I was really struck in this game by the contrast to last season, where that first game against the Roosters was such a great day for the club and for rugby league and something we all look back on so fondly. And it sort of kicked off this whole great run through the start of the season where they were making history every week and, you know, everything was new and exciting and all of that. And there's a real kind of pioneer spirit to what they were doing. But in a second year can only ever be a second year, you know, it can't ever really have that same sort of deal. And you need to find something to replace it. And I just don't know if the Dolphins have found that yet, you know. And honestly, it's if it was later in the season, this could have got way worse. This could have been 50 plus or 60 plus or something like that. I think it's only because the Cowboys kind of weren't quite operating at peak capacity yet that it wasn't, but horrible signs for the Finns.
Yeah, not great. Can we get a camera in the pads on the goalpost, please, for the Dearden try? Like, let's get one in there. We got him in the corner post. Can we get one in the actual post? Might have been helpful. I have no idea if he scored. I think he did, but I wasn't sure.
Do you
think
if you had to choose between a camera behind the post and a camera in the post.
Yeah. No, that was my next note because that did happen because I don't know if Fox were at the game commentating on it.
No way were Fox at the game.
No, because Warren Smith did not have any idea that Chad Townsend had kicked that field goal, and neither did I because you can't tell. Put a camera up. My first sound the bell. First one of the year. My well, crusade not, that
not,
I will never.
It's not. You said not, it last sorry. Week.
First one of the regular season. My crusade on this will never die. If you know or you think someone's setting up a field goal, get the behind the shot angle. Even if it's behind the ruck, it doesn't matter. Just show us the angle of the ball that we can see it, whether it's going in or not. Because no one had any idea. No one had any clue. Even the commentators.
Well, I trust the commentators on that and.
If the game is,
there are more and more games being called off the TV now than ever before. So the commentators have as much an idea as we do just sitting at home. So, but if they're not going to pay money to fly blokes to games, why would they pay money to install an extra camera?
It's a great point. I mean, it's just ridiculous, man. Like if you flew all these people to Vegas, you can't get people up on a plane to Brisbane to call a game at the stadium. What are we doing? Come on. What are we doing?
I don't know, man.
It's terrible. One real thing. We're both very pro penalty try, usually. And it's tough to remember.
I would say that's more of a you thing.
It's me than you.
You love penalty tries.
I love penalty tries. I think they should be given a lot more often. Having said that, this was the worst penalty try call I've ever seen.
It was not great.
And there was no audio either. The bunker cut out, so we didn't get the justification for it. But I just bizarre.
I'm sure the justification was very stupid.
Okay,
I have no doubt it was
the only silver lining is it happened at what 37-12 or something, so it didn't affect the outcome of the match, but still it was kind of just like what are we doing.
Maybe Kyle Felt was just being generous when he dropped that ball.
It's true. He's like, he respects the game.
You know what, we got one we shouldn't have. Finns, here's one back for all of you.
Man of the people. So yeah, bizarre call, just strange. And thank God it wasn't a close game, but what the hell are we doing?
Yeah, look, I don't know. I do think it's one that they sort of talked themselves into a little bit. You know, I remember when they were looking at it and I thought they were looking to check if Bostock had touched it. And I was like,
yeah,
they're spending a lot of time on this, given he clearly didn't get near it. That is a funny one. And then Chris Butler runs around and points to the ground and we're like, yeah, okay, penalty try. Why not? Bungard will like this. He loves penalty tries.
Didn't like it, Nick. Didn't like it.
not like this.
The next time some blowhard says, oh, they just look for reasons not to give tries, you show them this and it'll shut them the hell up.
Show them the Labert incident.
The Labert incident. Yeah. Anything else before we move on?
No, that's about it. That's about
wonderful.
It.
Let's preview Thursday's game.
How you feeling?
not great.
Wow. That good, eh?
Yeah, look, I mean, mate, it's a new year, renewed hope, you know, was completely destroyed within a couple of hours in Las Vegas last weekend. But
how real can the hope have been if it got destroyed in one game?
I don't know, man. That was a weird game. I didn't like it. I don't think I'm going to like this one either. South setting up to Brisbane Thursday night. Big game. Both teams were not at their best in Vegas, I think it's fair to say. And one of them's about to be 0-2.
And I think it's going to be the Rabbitohs of South Sydney. Even if they'd won in Vegas and looked great, and even if the Broncos had lost by more, I still probably would go Brisbane. Their ceiling is a lot higher. I don't know if the Rabbitohs are going to have the explosive qualities they need to kind of go with what is a very explosive Brisbane team. I'm expecting a pretty big bounce back from the Broncos after Vegas. I think there's a couple of blokes who will want to just sort of work out some frustrations on the field. You guys know what I'm talking about. And I think Brisbane might piece them up a little bit, you know?
So my main issue is, I think that the biggest problem for Souths in round one, well, there were a lot of problems, but the outside back is an issue, and that's not really their fault. They're missing Tyrone Munro, they're missing Jack White, and they're missing Campbell Graham. None of those, it's Monday morning, so there are no team sheets yet, but none of those guys are going to be playing this week. It's going to be probably the same back five as last week, which is extremely concerning against a team as potent as Brisbane. I think South's path to victory here is if Cody Walker can be the player that we know he can be in big games sometimes, and if the forward pack can aim up and sort of match it with the Broncos. They did go up there last year to Suncorp and handle the Broncos pretty easily in a similar situation. But I think that was a Rabbitohs team much more confident than the one that we have in front of us right now.
Broncos didn't pass that night either.
That's true. He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
He is.
Yeah. But the back line to me is a huge concern. Again, no excuses 2024. This is an excuse. This is probably why we're going to lose the game, because they're better than us at this. And yeah, it's tough to make a case for South winning this one. I mean, again, their forwards could just turn up and play a blinder. Latrell and Cody could, you know, play to the best of their abilities. There's a path there. This isn't like they're going up there to get flogged. They might well get flogged, but I don't think this is a fait accompli by any stretch. I think that Souths have too many good players for you to ever really write them off before a game, no matter how bad last season ended and no matter how futile the last half an hour of last week looked. But
yeah,
Brisbane are, I think, $1.40 favorites or something. They deserve to be.
Yeah. Vegas Richie outside the great state of Nevada. Don't know about it. Richie Kinnear on his home turf of Las Vegas, the American hero himself. Like, you know,
did he play for the Broncos or did I imagine that?
No, he played for the Broncos.
Oh, revenge game. There you go.
But yeah, I get the feeling they're going to target him pretty extensively. Reece Walsh loves going down that right hand side. I think Brisbane win this one, and I think they win it in pretty freewheeling fashion as well.
Yeah, I'm tipping South, but I don't believe it.
It's the second round of the season. You're not a coward if you tip against your team anymore.
Don't care. Just
Wow. Gotta
back the boys. I think I have to shave the moustache if we get smashed in this game.
How exciting.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to change something. We've got to try and fix the vibes. We've got to do something. I don't know.
A naked upper lip. Can that deliver South some redemption?
We can only hope.
Well, hopefully we'll find out.
Simi Renrandra trying the chip and chase.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh, yes, it will, yes.
Semi Rundrundra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Rundrundra.
All right, bit of news. We briefly mentioned Hamiso Tabuai-Fido's performance during the Dolphins game. But what I was quite shocked to find, Nick, and what you were quite shocked to find, Nick, is that he got a Dally M point.
I'm not shocked by this. I am angered by this. I am angered by this in a very significant way. I know there's a lot of you that listen to this show who do not care about the Dally M Awards and who think they're very dumb and stupid and that people get them wrong all the time. And I do not blame a single one of you for thinking that, because when stuff like this happens, when a player can be the worst player on the field, I love Hamiso Tabuai-Fido as a player. He's one of my favorites. It is not a stretch of the imagination at all to say he was the worst player on the field yesterday. When the worst player on the field can get a Dally M vote, that is the sort of thing that makes me think this award is not only beyond saving, perhaps it is not worth saving. The Dally M's are incredibly important to me because the history of the game is incredibly important to me. And things like this, individual player awards, It's how we put players into context in the history of the game. It's how we know the story of the game at any given time. It's how we talk to each other across time. It's how we tell each other the story of this sport that means so much to us. And when things like this happen, when Tabu Aifidea gets a vote for being, and when he's the worst player on the field, or when Adam Reynolds is the worst player on the field in the Broncos game against the Roosters and he gets a vote, like, what are we doing here? When we're in a situation where we don't know the names of the people who are picking the league's Player of the Year award. We don't know the names of the Dally M judges. They are anonymous now. The league said it was to boost the integrity of the award or whatever. I think it was because they were sick of the judges were getting sick of being criticized for who they were picking. And they should have been criticized because the picks were all really bad. And we're at a point now where the Dally M has never been lower in prestige. You know, Kalen Ponga won it last year. He wasn't going to turn up to the awards ceremony. I don't blame Kalen Ponga for that. Because no one cares about the Dally M's because their prestige is low. They are not taken seriously because they are not treated seriously by the people who run the award. You know, and like people can say, oh, this is one game. This is one vote in one game. Why are you getting so bent out of shape? Because this is how this stuff happens. This is how the prestige of these things is eradicated. It doesn't happen with one big moment or one big vote or anything like that. It is a slow process that happens over time. It happens like in 2018 when somebody gave out votes on a game they didn't even watch. That was Ruan Sims who gave votes to Api Coruscant in a game where Manly lost by 1,000 points. It happens when, and this is going back a little bit now, it happens when there's a journalist who I know who about 20 years ago was giving out votes on a game and he gave votes to a player who didn't play because he got it mixed up. And that's in the rule book. That is in the history of the game for all time, you know? Or it happens last season, right? Where Sean Johnson misses out on winning the Dally M by one vote, okay? And there was a game last year where he had two try assists against the Titans, where he had two try assists, two tries and three line break assists in, and he got two votes for it. And one bad decision in one game cost him a Dally M. And it happened when Jack Whiten won the Dally M. There was a game against the Warriors in like round 20 or something, right? Got sin binned, had four errors, five missed tackles, had a shocker, got three Dally M votes because he's Jack Whiten. He won the Dally M by a point. So we can't minimize these things. We can't just say it's one vote one time because it happens all the time. And the medals go to the wrong players because the votes go to the wrong players. And the fact that this still happens, the fact that this award is so fundamentally broken and has been for so long and nothing has been done to fix it, aside from giving the bad voters who decide these things even more power with the changes they made last year, it just absolutely kills me because it shows a contempt for the history of the game, even as it's happening. And the fix is really simple. It'll never happen, but it's really simple. You have to get rid of the game-by-game voting. It does not work anymore. It treats every game as being equal when every game is not. And you have to widen the voting pool. Former players are a really valuable perspective, but they are one perspective. You need to widen it. You need to have former players, you need to have current players, you need to have coaches, you need to have media. You know what happens if you widen the voting pool? You're more likely to get a consensus. You're more likely to get someone who actually deserves this stuff because the more people who are voting on it, the more likely it's going to end up being correct, even in a sport as dumb as rugby league and even for an award that has become as dumb as the Dally M's. I am not happy about this.
Yeah, so one vote for Tabu Aifidea. No, mate, I agree with everything you just said. I think that this is an award that meant so much when we were kids, and it's such an important thing to be able to frame great seasons that great players had. You go, oh, you remember Todd Carney's Dally M season, like things like that. And you know, we don't get that with Sean Johnson's 2023 season. We're not going to get that with whomever this year if the wrong player is selected again. And there's every chance that that happens because. I agree with you 100%. I think the system is so flawed. I've been beating this drum for years. I don't know why we're still doing game-by-game voting. It does not work. It doesn't make any sense. Just look at what other sports do. Just have a... My personal favorite is still the MVP system in America for the NFL, where they have 50 voters and they rank five players, the five best players in their opinions, and they do it at the end of the year. I think that's the best system. Maybe do 10 players. I don't know. Maybe you have 100 people do it. It doesn't matter. But I do completely 100% agree with you that the voting system is flawed. The voters are flawed and something has to change. And, but the unfortunate thing is until more people like you and I get mad about this, nothing is going to change. And it seems like a lot of people just don't care. And that's the biggest thing. Why do you think not enough people care?
I think because they've sort of been worn down by years and years and years of bad decisions and bad votes and dumb votes, you know? And so that's why I'm not, I don't blame anyone who doesn't care. Like Kalen, this is not a shot at Kalen Ponga at all, right? He wasn't going to go to the Dally M's last year until the league told him that he'd won, you know? I think for someone of his generation, he's about 5 or 6 years younger than us, doesn't care about it as much because it doesn't have as much prestige, right? Sean Johnson like flew half his family over because he thought he might win. He's closer to our age. He feels that, right? He kind of grew up with that. But it's just been degraded over time, you know, where, to the point where young people don't care about it. And in the absence of any sort of framework for discussing who actually is great and who isn't, you know what we end up relying on? Super coach scores and shit like that. That's why there's so many people in your life who think a good super coach score equals a good player, because there is no other historical framework to talk about these guys, because what we provide is just so, so poor. I'll tell you why Tabu Fidao got this vote, right? Here's his stat sheet from the game. 15 runs, 154 meters, 10 tackle busts, an offload, 2 line breaks, a try assists, right? You look at that on paper, you think, he did pretty well. Yeah, you think, he did pretty well. You watch the game, you're like, he was awful. He was terrible. He was the worst player on the field. I don't give a shit what the numbers say.
Correct.
That's why that's happened, man. And like in years to come, when like if you're a freak like me and you're digging through old games and looking to see who played well, you'll see the stat line. You'll see the Dally M vote. You'll think, man, he must have had a good one. When he didn't. It changes history right in front of us, man. And it just absolutely kills me. I honestly don't think it can be saved. I don't know if it's worth saving anymore. I used to always think it was, but if it's just going to keep happening this way and no one's going to do anything about it, nothing's going to happen. What's the point? Why should I care about any of this? Why should I take this seriously if the league itself doesn't?
The craziest thing is that they went away from this for the positional awards. They don't do that anymore. They don't do it by Dally M points. They vote on the best guys
they're
in each position.
They're so close to figuring out that that's a bad way to do things.
Yeah. It's like you've worked out that maybe the best winger shouldn't be determined by which winger got the most Dally M points, but you haven't kind of worked out that maybe just not having points is the better way to do
it. So it's not good enough for the positional awards, but it is good enough for the most prestigious individual award in the entire fucking game. Great work, guys.
Yep. All right. Injury news. Fair few. Wade Egan. If they've got him on the sideline for a while with that, was it an elbow injury, Nick? That's not great.
Yeah, it looked nasty. He's always got that elbow bandaged up, and it just sort of bent at a weird angle, kind of like an armbar. Like, not good.
Yeah. Connor Lemuelu is going to be out for a long time with a dislocated kneecap. That's nasty. Last thing the Dolphins needed.
That's nasty, and that can change you a little bit as well. That can rob you a little bit of your explosiveness. Connolly Lemuelu, I'm sorry for saying you would play for Queensland this year. I feel responsible for this.
Yeah. The biggest injury news has to be, which I think was read out mid-game yesterday afternoon, that a blood clot during Tom Gilbert's sort of rehab before his ACL surgery is going to delay his recovery even further. Now they're looking like maybe the middle of next season. Crazy.
Yeah, that's awful. Just his luck's got to turn soon, doesn't it, man? He cannot catch a break right now.
Yeah, and Josh Adokar is cleared of a fractured shoulder and a less serious AC joint injury. So he will miss at least round two, but, I mean, much better than a broken collarbone.
Way, way better. And it looked bad after the game when he's going around in the sling. I was sort of like fearing for the worst. So bit of good news for the Dogs.
I think he should rest up and rest until, I don't know, the game after Good Friday, just in case. I think that's the most important thing to
you beat them. You beat them by 1,000 points.
Do you remember what happened in that
every
game?
Every year, every
Do you
year,
remember
every
what
year
happened in that
Friday.
Game last year?
Yeah, he's won by 1 million points.
No, it was pretty tight. And then Josh Adokar went off injured. And they put, I think, Jacob Preston in the centers. And Raymond Fekala Marinier.
No, they put DePauw.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we feasted. So, you know, it actually is extremely relevant to Good Friday if Josh Adokar plays or not. And he's a great player. Mitch Moses apparently should be fine. So, yeah, good. They said don't kick, but other than that, you're all good. And Kieran Foran, calf injuries. Des Hasler was close to playing. Didn't play. So, yeah. Okay, well, rib cartilage injury too. I thought he was quite poor for them, but that's still a big loss if he's missing time.
When's Nia Quarry meant to be back?
Oh, it's not on this this injury wrap on the NRL website. But, what do you want from me? So yeah, I don't know. So yeah, a few injuries. So nothing.
Couple Danny Lira's
back. Yeah, I mean it's footy. People get hurt. These things happen, you know. You got anything else you want to say before we?
Dally M, Hooker of the Year, Danny Levi.
I mean, it could happen. How many points did he get? I mean, to be fair, he scored a try and saved a try with that obstruction penalty. So, I don't know, just
a bit of gamesmanship from Danny. Nah, he you won't believe this. Didn't get a vote.
Oh, who got all the votes for your game?
They actually got the Canberra game pretty right. So, one more Dally M hate thing. I hate how they've got two judges doing both games.
Yeah,
because all it does is totally blow it out for sort of players that those judges favour. Like Nico Hines got 6 points for the Sharks Warriors game. Yeah, like
Jeez.
So both judges gave him 3 points. Like, what are we doing?
I thought he had a good game, but come on.
Yeah, I know. That's like, and the reason because of the way he plays, because he's so dominant on the ball, he touches it so often. As long as he plays like that, he's going to be with a Dally M chance, like almost regardless. Of how
I would have given Fogarty the points down for the Raiders.
So Fogarty got 4, Tarpane got 3, Smithy's got 2, Hosking's got 2, and Tomoko got 1.
That's a pretty decent spread, to be fair.
But they did well there.
I just saw that Luke Brooks got 4 points for Manly last week.
Sure.
Dear me.
Why not?
Scored a try.
He sure did.
I love the Dally M's. They're so stupid.
So like, right, Lindsay Collins got 4 votes, Victor Radley only got 2. Like, what are we doing?
Radley was the best player on the field.
Yeah, I know he was. And if he wasn't, Tedesco was. Like, Lindsay Collins was out there. Like, he definitely played in that game. When I was at the Telegraph, and it was just after the NRL had taken back the Dally M votes, me and one of my mates there used to have a competition when we got the votes in on a Monday of worst Dally M vote of the week.
Oh.
And we always had one.
Yep.
We always had one.
Remember that game? I think it might have been 2 seasons ago where like the Roosters played the Tigers in round one and tailed them up by about 100 and Dane Laurie got 2 points because he had like 2 nice touches in the first 20 minutes.
Yep, I sure do. Like I said, that's how these things happen. Like, it's not one bad vote one time. It's a lot of small things over a long period of time. And that's why no one cares.
I was shocked. I was legitimately, I know that it's a very inert sport and nothing ever changes. And it's run by a few like gray suits that, you know, unless the newspaper writes about it, we'll never change anything. But I legitimately was shocked that when the Ruan Sims thing happened, that there wasn't like a substantial reform at the time. Because that was so public when it happened and so embarrassing for the league.
She stood down. She stood down as a judge, but I don't think there was a lot of heat in terms of
maybe
the actual process,
idea.
The fact that it got to the point.
Because surely if you have any logic in your brain, you're like, well, if this person has admitted to this, there's a gigantic chance she's not the first person to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So,
yeah.
There you go. Now I'm all riled up on a Monday morning.
It was a good rant, mate. I liked it. I'm ready to run. I'm going to go do some weights after this. I'm fired up. I'm going to just replay you ranting that on repeat. So
doing a bench press, frothing at the mouth about Jack.
He's
White
right,
Dally.
He's right.
He's right. Damn it.
Sam Burgess should have won in 2014. And thank you to the people in the top 2 tiers on our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/NRLBoomRookies. You get access to a Discord server, merch discounts, a third show every single week. You can still enter the Coltrane Cup. You'll be beating half the people, all those losers, the tip teams that lost. Not me, not
so
Nick.
Our winner a couple of years ago did
Matt
manage. Matt
started
Duggar,
1-2.
Started 1-2 and managed to come back and win. So you can still do it. But you got to get on now.
You can't really spot. You can't spot the pack 2 weeks. You can spot them one.
Just the one. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So thank you to Chris Abnell, Dave, Michael. On the plus side, it's only round one. On the bad side, there's 23 games to go. Murray, Rocky, Ruffy, Stew, Weak Gutted Wayno, Adam Small, AJ, no can dunk, but good fundamentals. Ashley and Martin, Broncos legend, Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pom, Butsy. Calling obstructions is the finest thing a person can do. Jonah is my president. Carlingford, Lyon, Coltrane, Tipper, Chewbacca, Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinan, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, future club Churchill medalist, Kian Kalamatangi, Iris Stang, Booens, Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Kicks Outside of the Comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles, Midmont, Mads Taylor's version, Manly are no longer the team of the pod, Matthew Duggan, Morgan Watkins, my name is Nick Campton, and rugby union is my favourite type of rugby, my ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad, Nathan Hughes, never trendy, Nat Kodrick lives on my street, subliminally coaching him to run it straight, Basami Army, Paul Mack 78, Reese Brown, Roxanne Clark, see you in Vegas, Shunter, sometimes even the great Rodrigo Adrado forgets to change his name, stupid white bastard, T2T, give me the fucking ball, tanking your Coltrane Cup with cowardly picks is the finest thing a person can do. In fact, that's Fred Astaire stuff. The black vegetable Thor, Tom Hardy was, and Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and everyone who just listens. Thank you as well. That's a line from Rugby League, right? It's a Vossi commentary line, that's Fred Astaire stuff, right?
I don't know if it's a line from the old Rugby League game on Xbox or whatever, but it
or if it's just something he just said.
Well, that's the thing. Like Fred Astaire's doing great because he's been dead for a long time now, but if someone does a bit of dancing on the footy field, that's Fred Astaire stuff. That's the that's the go-to. You know, it's like how for a long time, if there was a very blatant forward pass that got thrown, that got let go.
Now it's like, Joe Montana.
Yeah, but now it's changed. Now it's Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, yeah.
And now I think it's going to switch to Pat Mahomes, but it's good to know that some things never change.
Yeah, I'll miss you, Steve Perry, but I'm glad that's Fred Astaire stuff is Luke's new name. It's a strong change. Some strong changes this week, every week. Keep them going, boys. I really do enjoy the silliness that we get out of that every week. I look forward to your dad's next inside joke that I don't get that you explain on the show. Can't
yeah, I know. Well, he'll think of something.
No, that might have sounded sarcastic. It wasn't meant to be. I legitimately do enjoy them. And I legitimately enjoy rugby league. But I also legitimately enjoy getting the hell out of here, which we're going to do right now. So we're back on Wednesday for patrons with question time. We're back on Friday morning for everybody else to recap South Broncos, unless we lose by 50, in which case there will be no more podcasts. Say goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
And it's goodbye from me.